Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the pieces of the war for the free world for quite some time that has warranted close attention and careful analysis is, of course, Russia, previously doing business as the Soviet Union. A man who has studied it closely, written extensively, and been extraordinarily thoughtful in his analyses and commentaries on same is our first guest. He is Dr. Stephen Blank. He is these days a senior fellow for Russia at the American Foreign Policy Council. But for some 26 years, he has served as a professor of national security studies at the U.S. Army War College. He has authored a simply mind-boggling number of monographs, scholarly articles, and books, some 900 of them all in. And he is always a welcome guest here. Sir, so good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me again, Frank.
Well, I think that I have to go to the topic a du jour with you, Steve, if I could, and that is what are you making of the controversy concerning what President Trump may or may not have said to the Russians that could, according to some, have resulted in them learning about not just some sensitive information perhaps provided to us by Israeli intelligence sources, but also perhaps in the process compromising such sources and methods?
Well, first of all, Trump has admitted that he did it, and he claims that he has an absolute right to do so. And under the law, the president can declassify anything he likes. But as you well know, because you served in the Reagan administration, you have to declassify it before you reveal it. And I doubt that Trump did that. As a matter of fact, his NSC advisor actually said he had no idea where the information was coming from. But that doesn't excuse the breach of security. I think it's unconscionable. And I think it's something that, you know, might even justify an impeachment investigation, sad to say, because it certainly is reckless endangerment of people's lives. And even though the president has the right to declassify things, I don't think he declassified it. I just think he blurted it out. And it shows, again, that he's just psychologically not fit for the job, and that's sad to say. But, I mean, there's just so much evidence for this that it's obvious to anybody.
I know you've had concerns about him on several accounts for some time. Let me pursue that in the next segment a bit with Diana West. And I want to turn, if I may, with you to something else that I know is very much on your mind with respect to the Russian portfolio that also warrants close attention, as I say. The Arctic. Stephen Blank, what are the Russians doing in the Arctic, and what are its implications for our equities and interests in that very important part of the world?
Basically, there are two things they are trying to do. One is to take advantage of climate change, which is now making the Arctic much more navigable. And what the Russians want to do is claim a huge amount of territory off their continental shelf as theirs, beyond what the UN Commission on the Law of the Sea grants littoral states, so that they can monopolize the Northern Sea route trade and to develop what are believed to be enormous energy and mineral deposits in the Arctic Ocean. Unfortunately, the price of energy and the sanctions preclude them from getting very far in this because energy costs are so prices are so low that to develop the Arctic makes no sense, the cost being so high. And sanctions make it difficult for them to get investment in the technology they need. The second thing they're doing, I think, is much more dangerous. They are militarizing the Arctic. They believe that there is some sort of NATO military threat of missiles or aerospace attack coming from the United States. Now, as we all know, for years, both the United States and the Soviet Union, and now Russia, have had their submarine-launched ballistic missiles based in areas where they could launch over the Arctic because of the polar route. It's the shortest direct route between Russia and the U.S. But apart from that, there has been no military confrontation in the Arctic, and nobody in NATO has even thought about any kind of military confrontation. But Russia insists on building up a military, and just yesterday was revealed they're building what appear to be nuclear weapon sites in the Arctic. It's absolutely crazy, given Russia's real capabilities and whatever real threats Russia might actually be facing, to imagine that there's some sort of strange-lovian threat out there to the Arctic and to these energy sources. But this is now a driving factor in Russian military policy.
We are hearing about NATO exercises, I think, under the heading Arctic Challenge, which certainly seems to be apt, given what you've just described. Are you anticipating, while there's not the kind of build-up or power projection by the Europeans or the NATO alliance or the Americans acting unilaterally, for that matter, in the Arctic, that we may see a real contest shape up there that that could get ugly?
Well, there is certainly that kind of possibility. But historically, the Arctic has never been a primary theater of confrontation. It has always been secondary. For example, in World War II, the Arctic became important because the Allies used it to convoy supplies through lend-lease supplies to Russia. And there was a lot of naval fighting up in the Arctic Ocean between German subs and Allied convoys. So I don't see the Arctic as the primary theater where a confrontation might take place. But the point is that it becomes militarily important in the event of confrontation elsewhere, because Russian subs will try to go through the Arctic Ocean into the North Sea and then into the North Atlantic, and because also they have nuclear weapons based in Murmansk. And you can't be too complacent about how the Russians are thinking about using their nuclear weapons these days.
No, that's exactly right. As you've pointed out, this is becoming not only something they've got enhanced capabilities to do, but doctrinally they seem to be adopting an ever more aggressive posture in that regard. Stephen Blank, let me ask you about a related issue. You have written at Newsweek recently, speaking of NATO, that the upcoming NATO summit must be used as an opportunity to have the alliance really recalibrate on the nature of the challenge that they're now facing from Russia. You've gone so far as to describe it as Russia being at war with Europe. Tell us more about that.
Well, if you read Russian military doctrine and statements, going back to 2005, if not earlier, their security policy starts from the presupposition of threat, and in 2004 and 5, they were making statements to senior officials, which have been published, so they're out there if you care to look for them, where they say that they're at war. I mean, this will come as a shock to everybody in the West, because there is no war with Russia, but from the Russian point of view, they're at war with Europe. It's a political warfare. It's not guns. It's cyber. It's diplomacy, democracy promotion, threats, etc. Since then, they have resolved to build up their capabilities to subvert, penetrate, and deter European and American capabilities from threatening them. And we now see a formidable array of both military and non-military capabilities. As far as actual war, just look at the information warfare. Again, using the term the way they do, to embrace the totality of attacks on information networks, on media, and so on. They interfered in the American election. They interfered in the Dutch elections. They interfered in the Austrian elections. They interfered in the German elections, and most prominently in the recent French presidential elections. This is clearly, being directed from the center. It's not happenstance that it's happening. These things are taking place.
Yeah. Do you see in the various instances you've just described evidence that they're actually having an impact? This is much debated in the United States, of course, but has it made a difference, the fact that they're engaging in these influence operations in these other countries?
Well, it makes a difference in two respects. In Europe, they have failed to achieve their goals. Their candidates have lost across the board: Holland, Austria, France. Nonetheless, the purpose of this kind of warfare is also to unnerve the target state. So there's a perpetual war of nerves going on. So while they have lost, they have not ceased. And they are continuing to do this now in the Czech Republic, which is about to have elections, apparently. So this is a permanent, ongoing condition we have to get used to. Now, in the United States, You can't say that Trump won because the Russians helped him, although it's clear that they were trying to do that. But what has happened as a result of Trump's own misadventures is that American politics are in total chaos and the standing of the U.S. has been diminished. And those are victories for Putin.
This is another form of warfare for sure that warrants our close attention. Thanks for yours, Dr. Stephen Blank, to it and for sharing your insights with us as you have been generously doing in the past. We look forward to further conversations with you. Dinah West is up next. We'll talk about political warfare straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.